Same here with Elwyn Robinson from LionheartHerbs.com. And what are we discussing today?
Well, I thought a really good subject to start with is what is an optimum diet? Because a lot of people, a lot of my clients especially, they'll say to me, I'm really confused. I keep hearing this is bad for you, that's bad for you. And they kind of don't know what's left, basically. All the foods that they're used to eating, basically, are bad for them to one degree or another. So the normal sort of cry for help I get is, so what do I actually eat? Also, how do I prepare it? And this is something we'll go over in a separate conversation, I'm sure. But for now, I just wanted to talk about, basically, what constitutes an optimal diet? What are the, like, the building blocks of a diet that is truly optimum?
Okay. And why would you want, just quickly, for those people that don't know, why would you want an optimum diet? And what results can you expect from following one?
That is an excellent question, it's so in my head to assume that we'd want to do that. So what is an optimal diet and why would we want to follow one? Well, basically your diet is like the foundation of your whole life, okay? So there's more to life than what you eat, there's no doubt. There's what you do, there's the way you choose to move your body, there's the way you think, there's whether you're living in alignment with your true purpose, there's your environment in terms of whether you're in a smoggy city or whether you're, you know, living in pristine countryside. There are loads of factors which will impact your health and therefore your energy and therefore your experience of your whole life. But what is fundamental to those is your diet. So even if a person is living their life in a really healthy way in a lot of other ways, or even if they're in a really healthy environment, diet is still going to be a problem. Diet's still going to slow them down if it's suboptimum, if it's less than optimum. So an optimum diet isn't the be-all and end-all of health, but it is an essential prerequisite. It is the foundation for a truly healthy, vital life, which is what we all want, you know. Some of us are more in touch with wanting that than others, and I'm assuming that the people listening here are fairly in touch with their desire to live an optimum life, where they have an abundance of energy, where they feel strong, where they feel confident, where they feel clear-headed, a good memory, a good grasp of what's going on, ability to focus and concentrate, ability to understand and grasp things intuitively, ability to be at peace, ability to be calm and relaxed. Now, a lot of these qualities I'm describing, a lot of people won't really connect to food, you know. These will sound like psychological things, psychological issues.
Yeah.
But the reality is that all psychology is based on physiology, which basically means the body, right? The mind is grounded in the body. Whatever your beliefs are in terms of spirit or religion or whatever else, it must be admitted that the mind is dependent on the body and dependent on the health of the body. So, for instance, if someone has brain damage or, you know, damage to the central nervous system, then that's going to upset the functioning of their mind. It's going to stop the mind from functioning optimally, no matter what other good intentions they have or no matter what else is going on. So we can assume that the mind is very, and the emotions are very much dependent on the body. Okay, so the emotions rest in the endocrine system as well as the central nervous system. It depends what emotions you're talking about. So basically, just to sum up, how you mind works, how you think and how you feel is fundamentally based on the health of the body, and from a Taoist perspective, the amount of energy available in the body and a freedom from energetic blockages in the body. So there's lots of reasons why a person suffers from a lack of energy. There's a lot of reasons that people have energetic blockages, and food is not the only one. But if your diet is of a bad quality, then you are draining energy to try and digest that food, and that food is definitely causing blockages inside your digestive system, which has a knock-on effect like a domino on all the other systems of your body, including the central nervous system, including the endocrine system. So in other words, including the way you think, including the way you feel. So basically, to round up, why do we want to eat an optimum diet? Because we want to live an optimum life. And an optimum life means feeling good, thinking well, and achieving, you know, which requires having plenty of physical energy, plenty of mental energy, plenty of emotional energy.
And of course, the bonus you get is you look great.
Ah, looking good, of course. Sorry, I forgot about that, the fourth aspect. Yeah, absolutely. That's another excellent reason why we want to eat an optimal diet, because it is impossible to look good. It's impossible to radiate health and vitality, which is basically what good-lookingness is, if we are eating a less than optimum diet. Now, just to add, I mean, you might say, well, I know someone who's beautiful or gorgeous and they eat McDonald's all day. Fair enough, you know. A person is born with a certain amount of innate vitality, and it's not really fair. Some people have got more, some people have got less, right? So, to a certain degree, you can get away with eating a suboptimal diet and still look good, and still feel good, and still be strong, maybe, and still have a good focused mind. Okay, this is definitely possible, but it's only possible for a certain period of time. Now, for some people, it might not be possible at all, because they haven't got that innate vitality that they're born with, so they suffer straight away. For some people, it may take quite a while for the effects of their bad eating habits, their eating suboptimal food, to hit them. But eventually, it will hit you if you're eating suboptimal foods. Eventually, you will start to suffer. Your appearance will suffer. Your feelings will suffer. Your feeling good will suffer. And what we're trying to do is say, okay, so even if right now, you know, you are still feeling looking good and you don't have any problems, it's still worth going on to an optimal diet now, because you don't want to wait until you're starting to suffer from the effects of not eating an optimal diet before you start eating an optimal diet.
And also, imagine how good you would be if you already feel good eating crap food.
Exactly. Definitely. Very good point, yeah. Yeah, no matter how good you feel, it's always possible to feel better. No matter how good you look, it's always possible to look better.
Okay. So, what is an optimal diet then? What are the best things to eat?
Well, in terms of the way to eat, like I said, I think we'll go over that in a different program. So I'll probably do a program at some point about going from sugar burning to fat burning. And, you know, I'll go over then exactly what that means. But to eat in an optimal way, we really do need to get most of our calories from fats. At least that's the case if we're of a European descent. If we're from a more... our descent is from a hotter climate, then that actually does vary, and perhaps a high carbohydrate diet is more appropriate for us. But at least those people who are listening now, who come from a northern European descent, you know, we want to go on to fat burning, which most of us don't do. So I'll address that in a different issue. But just today, what I really want to address is which foods are actually best. Now, I just want to add, before I go through which foods to add, my basic approach to all this, which is that it really doesn't help to be focusing on which foods not to eat, because whatever you focus on, you'll tend to have in your life. Okay, and as soon as you say no to someone, the instinctive response is,
why not?
Yeah, or the opposite, yes, you know. The rebelliousness, and this is innate in any healthy human being to be rebellious, you know. So rather than playing along with that and saying, no, I can't have this chocolate cake, and then, yes, but I want it, you know, we'll just ignore all that, and rather than looking at what's bad, we're going to look at what's good, so what we actually need to add into our diet. One other thing I want to say before I go through the list of things which are really excellent to add in our diet as well, is to introduce the concept of abundant eating. Now, what abundant eating says is that normally the approach we have is that when we're being good, we eat healthy foods, and when we're being bad, we eat unhealthy foods, right?
Yeah.
At least from the perspective of health. Now, unfortunately, the way it also goes is when we're being good, we don't eat much, and when we're being bad, we eat quite a lot.
Yeah.
Right? So when we're being good, we'll just have a small salad. When we're being bad, we'll eat, you know, a whole, you know, a couple of Happy Meals in one sitting or whatever. So, first of all, I'd like you to just turn that upside down and turn that around and realise that actually, even though it is ideal to eat a small amount of healthy food, in reality, most of us aren't going to do that. We're going to go between eating healthy food and unhealthy food some of the time. So we're going to switch around that paradigm, and we're going to start eating an abundant amount of healthy food, especially first thing in the day. So we start off our day by eating as much healthy food as possible, and I'm going to go through a list of what that actually is in a bit. Then we're much less likely to be tempted to eat unhealthy food later for several reasons. One of them is that if we're eating healthy food, we're not going to have set off a blood sugar spike, which will lead to a blood sugar crash, which will lead to us desiring more sugar to keep us going. So that's one reason. Another reason is because we're going to be literally so full of food, we're not going to be able to stuff that much more in there, right? So if you wake up in the morning and you just have like a small salad or a green juice or something like that, then by lunchtime, you're going to have space in there for like a massive unhealthy meal. But if you wake up and you know, when you have breakfast, you really fill yourself up, you're not going to have space in there again when a few hours time to completely fill it up with junk food. You might be able to fit in a bag of crisps or a chocolate bar, but that's it. You're not going to be able to fit in five chocolate bars. Like, in a row like some of my clients see, because you're literally not going to have space. So it's looking at what we will do rather than what we should do. So yeah, ideally we're going to eat a small amount of a perfectly healthy, super nutrient dense food, but in reality what we're going to do is sometimes we're going to stuff ourselves. So let's stuff ourselves with something that's high water content, so foods that are fresh and raw ideally, because that means that it's not such a chore for the body to digest. And the last reason why often when we eat abundantly, especially first thing in the morning, we don't feel like eating more food later, is because we've actually genuinely satisfied our nutritional needs. Now, you've probably heard of the phrase empty calories, right?
Yeah.
So what empty calories means is that you're getting calories, but you're not actually getting all the nutrition with it, so which comes in the form of vitamins, minerals, enzymes, phytonutrients. Phytonutrients basically means plant nutrients, so it covers a vast range of different nutrients. And living water, structured water, like you're only getting plant food. You're not getting all that if you're eating empty calories. So it's no surprising that you still have a ravenous hunger and you can just eat and eat and eat and eat, because the foods that you're eating aren't satisfying you. So if you eat some really super nutrient-dense, healthy food, like you would include an optimum diet, which quite often is called superfoods, first thing in the day, then you're much less likely to want unhealthy foods later on. Okay?
Yeah.
So these are the three reasons why I recommend abundant eating, especially for your first meal of the day, which shouldn't be more than a couple of hours after you wake up.
And also it's always easier to add than take away in terms of what you allow yourself. You're like, no, I can't have coffee because it's bad. Then all you're thinking about is, I want coffee.
Definitely.
And I really want coffee. Whereas if you think, if I just have a green juice before my coffee, then you're onto a winner. Because by the time you've drunk your green juice, you're like, I don't need a coffee, it's fine.
Totally. Have you found that in your experience?
Yes, I have, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. And that's absolutely the recommendation that I make. That's really excellent. I've found that in the case of coffee quite often, that when you recommend a person having something alkalizing, like something green, like a green juice, then they're not going to need an alkaloid like coffee. And we'll talk about the difference between alkalizing and alkaloids in another session as well, because it deserves a whole conversation about it, I think. But for now, I'm going to go straight to what are the optimum foods to eat. So I think what I'll start with is the very obvious ones. The first one would be vegetables. Okay?
Okay.
Now, with vegetables, we're talking about especially green leafy vegetables. Not so much root vegetables, although they're okay. Root vegetables like carrots, parsnips, squash, they're okay. They are acid-forming, so for most people they're not an optimal food, but for those people who've already been on the health journey for a while, they're perfectly decent. What I'd say is if you do eat root vegetables, have them raw, because by the time you cook a carrot or by the time you roast a parsnip, you've actually converted those starches into something that's really highly sugary, and it's got pretty much the same effect on your blood sugar as like table sugar, pretty much. So it's just going to cause a big spike. So cooked root vegetables are not part of optimal nutrition.
And when they're raw, I find they're quite grounding, so they can be useful if you're feeling like you really need to kind of ground yourself and sort of focus. I think they can be quite useful for that. I don't know if you'd agree.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That's definitely the case, yeah. And it's also a seasonal thing, so in the winter time, they're much more appropriate to eat because it would be a more natural time for us to eat them.
Sure.
In summer, it's less appropriate. So there's various factors always involved, and yeah, I very much agree that they are grounding. From the Taoist perspective, they work on the kidney meridian system, so they help tonify that, which is the grounding part of the body. So yeah, I would definitely agree with that too.
Which, when you're eating raw food, sometimes you need flying off any green juices.
Well, yeah, definitely. I would say that grounding would mostly come from a third category and fourth category of food, which would be nuts and seeds. So, because they're very fatty, they're the most grounding things. So I wouldn't rely on roots for grounding per se, but they do have that function too, I very much agree. So which vegetables are good then? I told you I wasn't going to talk about what's bad. So yeah, you know, raw root vegetables, quite often optimum. Fresh herbs, they're an excellent example of an optimum vegetable food. So things like parsley, coriander, tarragon, rosemary, sage, oregano, pretty much all of them, to be honest. Any fresh herb is really nutritious. Any green leafy vegetable in general is really nutritious. Green leafy vegetables Green leaves are full of an antioxidant substance called chlorophyll. Chlorophyll is basically the green pigment in plants. This is incredibly good for you in so many ways. It's a blood builder from a Taoist tonic point of view. So the difference between a chlorophyll molecule and a hemoglobin molecule, which is the red blood cell, is they are identical except for the element in the middle with hemoglobin is iron and the element in the middle of chlorophyll is magnesium. But there's just this, basically, this this they look almost identical with one very small difference. So your body can convert them into blood very easily, building
with
up blood.
Iron, presumably. As long as it has a good source of iron, it can...
Yes, absolutely true. Okay. But luckily, green foods also tend to be very high in iron.
Okay.
And a separate load.
Okay.
Yes. But most people don't really have a problem with a lack of iron because they get it in their meaty foods anyway. They get it in their animal foods, whereas most people are very deficient in chlorophyll. Basically, green leafy vegetables should make up the bulk of your diet in volume, not calories.
Yeah.
For most species who are similar to us, like the primates, the bulk of their diet is green leafy vegetables. This is what's appropriate to eat. People often talk about, when I say I'm a raw vegan who doesn't eat any meat or dairy, they say, where do you get your protein from? Well, raw leafy vegetables, which I also highly recommend, like spinach or like broccoli, actually have 50% of their calories coming from protein. So the idea that a vegetarian diet is a low-protein diet is very much off. And with the amount of protein that we're told we need is way over what we actually need anyway, but... the best quality protein is going to come from green vegetables. As I say, the greens also really high in magnesium. Magnesium is a mineral. Magnesium is also one of the minerals that we are most deficient in as a society. It's really essential. It's involved in over 300 metabolic processes, especially useful for the processes which create energy, basically. So if you're a person who, first of all, experiences a lack of energy in your life, second of all, experiences an excess of fear in your life, then magnesium is really appropriate for you. The reason for that is where fear is down to the kidneys and the adrenals, and when the adrenals are overactive, they tend to cause your body to excrete excessive amounts of magnesium, so you run out of magnesium really quickly. An interesting little tip I heard from a woman who does a lot of public speaking, she said that whenever she does public speaking, she always doses up on magnesium beforehand, and she finds she has no stage fright whatsoever. Now, this may seem like, okay, well, it's just because she's really experienced, but there are some people, you know, who, even though they've been performing for 10 or 20 years, they still throw up every time before they're due to go on. And a lot of this is basically due to fear. And fear, from a physiological point of view, is down to a lot of things, but one of the easiest ways to remedy it and to go counteract it is to really feed the adrenal glands. And the adrenal glands are fed by mainly salt of the good kind, the healthy kind, sodium, and vitamin C is another thing. And lastly, and probably most importantly, because it's the thing that people are most chronically deficient in, usually magnesium. So if we're eating magnesium-rich foods, like the green leafy vegetables, then that's going to make a huge difference to our mood and our energy levels, which... obviously crucial to us having an enjoyable life.
Sure. Can I just say, on the note of green leafy vegetables, for a lot of people, I'm sure that sounds like a really exciting diet. I was not one of these people. But I have since learned, I know you're going to do another series on how to prepare delicious food.
Mm.
You know, that's...
please put in any tips now, though, yeah.
But there are actually a lot of ways to... make a big bowl of greens really, really very appealing. However far that may sound right now, but there are ways, particularly kale. I've got into kale at the moment, loving kale. But
wow.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
That's there great, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that. There are numerous ways to make it delicious. I'll just add another little caveat, which is that green leafy vegetables can be very hard to digest by those whose digestion has been compromised, in which case they are not optimal in the form of a salad. They would need to actually be juiced or blended.
That is how I started getting greens into my diet, because it is the easiest, quickest and best way to just get a load in there, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, which brings me to celery, which is kind of leafy, but not really a vegetable, which is probably one of... No.
It's actually technically a herb, I believe.
Okay. Well, so I'm lumping vegetables and herbs things together in this. Yeah. Celery is amazing. It's really high in organic sodium. It's really excellent, again, for the kidneys and adrenals, which are the root of the body. I recommend to everyone that you juice at least one head of celery, preferably two a day, which is just that on its own, if you do nothing else, will have a big effect on your life and your lifestyle. In terms of more green leafy vegetables like coriander or spinach or kale or whatever, if you want to add those into your diet but you're a beginner, I recommend you check out Lion and Heart Herbs how-to section, and I've got a little feature on there about green smoothies. And if you want a recipe book, you just need to sign up to our newsletter and we'll get a free green smoothie recipe book to you straight away. So that's what I recommend for those.
I did find when I first started juicing, I would have to put an apple or a pear in it to make it more palatable. However, now I no longer need to, but it did help through the transition phase.
Yeah, a lot of people find that. What I generally recommend is that juicing things like kale and spinach is a bit or parsley is a bit heavy going for most people because they are quite bitter tasting. But if you just juice cucumber on its own, or cucumber and celery, it is fairly inoffensive, even to someone to whom greens seem like something that you'd rather avoid. This is like a really good way to start. I'd say rather than going for a big complicated one where you have apple and cucumber and celery and kale and lemon juice and ginger and all these things like I find people have, rather than adding a load of quite strong tasting greens in and then soothing them with a sweet food, I personally recommend that you just start off with the totally innocent, neutral tasting greens of first of all cucumber, then moving on to cucumber and celery, which is a little bit stronger still, and then going further as you go. I mean, if the taste of that is still quite offensive to you, even just cucumber juice on its own, then fair enough, by all means, add something sweet. But I would say that cucumber juice on its own is so neutral tasting, it's pretty much like water, and yet it nonetheless is really nutritious and is part of an optimal lifestyle. The only reason I haven't mentioned cucumbers yet is because they're technically fruits, which will be our next section. But they're definitely part of the green juice conversation. So green leafy vegetables, also give an honourable mention to watercress and rocket. They're really highly sulphurous as well, which kind of means spicy greens. Sulphur is another mineral. It's amazing for a lot of bodily processes. It helps for any sort of inflammation. So if you're in pain anyway, if you have any stiffness, so it'll help for athletic performance or if you do yoga or anything like that, because it helps loosen up your joints. It's also really amazing as a beautifying mineral. It's one of the two main beautifying minerals, sulfur. It's the mineral that's responsible for giving you a rosy glow and a sort of a general sort of shine to your skin. That would be another reason to go for those. And talking of sulphurous, that would be the last category of vegetables that I want to talk about that are really optimal. That would be the sulphurous vegetables, a lot of which are root. So that would be onions, leek, garlic, shallots, chives. These come under the category of sulphurous. They're quite sharp, they're quite spicy. Again, they've got a hell of a lot going for them. They're really nutritious. They've got sulphurous amino acids in, which are often lacking in someone who's otherwise eating an optimal vegan diet, like methionine and cysteine, which are two amino acids. Garlic is amazing in all sorts of ways. Other than that, it's one of the strongest antibacterial, antiviral, antifungal, antiparasitic herbs or vegetables known to man. So it's really amazing for giving you a good clean out. It's also one of the few substances, one of the only substances known to man that's vegan that contains long chain fatty acids. So they're the omega-3s that you normally only find in fish oil, called EPA and DHA. So they're an excellent vegan source of that. And they really are a superfood. The whole, so technically they would go in that category, but I'm deciding to put them with vegetables. They really are as amazing as they're made out to be. Garlic is used throughout the world by all cultures. It's pretty much universal. It grows throughout the world.
And I have, again, in my experience, found ways to actually really enjoy a bit of garlic and onion raw, which I never thought I'd do either, but it can be done. Yeah. It can be done.
Especially if you're in the habit of dehydrating, that's a particularly easy way to do it. But even raw in a salad, there's a way to make it there nice. Is. And maybe we'll do a program together at some point about exactly how we do all that.
Maybe.
But that's for the future.
We'll keep you posted.
So the next category we're going to look at is fruits. Now, obviously, when people think of healthy eating, they think of fruits and vegetables.
Although I found in my experience, I just put on an awful lot of weight.
Well, exactly. That's a really good point. So even though fruits are seen as being optimal, in reality, most of them aren't. This is the sad truth about them. There are exceptions to that, of course. They are basically the fruits which are not sweet. So that would be avocado, olives, lemons, limes, cucumber. These are all technically fruits. They all have amazing health benefits. And I recommend to everyone that you have basically all of these foods in your diet every day, with the possible exception of olives, because it's really hard to get high quality olives. But you know, an optimal diet to me would include at least one avocado a day, at least one lemon a day or lime, at least one cucumber a day. These are really essential, optimal fruits. Other than that, the only fruits that are really optimal are of the berry family. So, especially again for people of our heritage, it wouldn't really be natural normal for us to eat bananas and mangoes and all the very sweet fruits, because they cause a real blood sugar spike. So we won't talk about what not to eat, but so this is the reason we're excluding fruits and that like that from the optimal nutrition category. But what we'll throw in is the berries, especially the superfood berries like Incan berries, goji berries, camu camu berry, amla berry, acerola cherry.
That's all very well, but those all, again, really aren't from our climate. So in terms of, because you're basing certain foods on the fact that we're kind of in a European climate, how about things like raspberries and, because those are all superfood berries, which of course are fantastic.
Definitely. I'll just take issue with one thing, which is that goji berry has been found in the northerly hemisphere. It grows throughout the world. The northerly hemisphere. But other than that, you're right, most of these fruits are from South America. So definitely. Obviously, I'm not saying that we should only eat foods that are grown locally to us. So just let me just clarify that. All I'm saying is that there are certain types of food, for instance, really high glycemic index sugary foods, which we're not accustomed to and which just derange our blood sugar levels much more than we can cope with.
Yes, and I have found in my experience with my digestive system, bananas in particular don't really agree with me. However, no. I'm hesitant to disregard my beautiful mango and watermelon. But
there's another reason for bananas, which is that they're all also very stodgy. Basically,
they are,
really gunk
phlegmy
up.
Phlegmy, kind of.
Yeah, they gunk up the intestinal system, which exactly as you say, it's exactly right. It means that they're mucus forming. Then you're going to have a phlegmy reaction to them, so they're not ideal. And just to respond to your previous point as well, you're absolutely right. All the berries which are indigenous to, you know, our local area, whether that be blueberries, blackberries, red currants, black currants, strawberries, you know, these are all raspberries, these are all excellent foods and we should eat them. I will add a little, I will make a little addition to that, which is do buy them organic. A lot of the time, the ones that aren't are very heavily hybridized, so the sweeter they are, often the less natural they are, the more they've been bred to be super sweet, and the more that they will still have a non-ideal effect on the blood sugar. So ideally, if we're eating organic fruits, how can we tell if food is hybridized or not? Well, if a food is seedless, then we know that it's been overly hybridized, we know it's no good for us. So we want foods with as many seeds in as possible. A good example of that is grapes, seedless grapes, watermelon, seedless watermelon, has a much worse effect on our health and our blood sugar than ones that actually have seeds in. So if you do love your watermelon or whatever, then make sure that it's a seed full one rather than a seedless one.
And also, I mean, I don't know how it is with these things, but with like papaya, for instance, I know the seeds, much as they taste disgusting, are actually very helpful for digesting.
Well, I'm just going to add that, watermelon especially, watermelon seeds are really healthy. They're very high in zinc, which is another mineral like magnesium that most people are chronically lacking in and really need in order to have optimum energy. They're also very good for the Jing, the kidney meridian system. So watermelon seeds are excellent. Like you say, absolutely right, papaya seeds are also really excellent for you. The main action they have, it's not so much nutritious, it's the fact that they're anti-parasitic. So very appropriate, again, for the climate that they come from, obviously. They sure. come from an area which has probably 100 times as many parasites as we do. And so therefore they're more appropriate for that area as well. And that is another point as well, that despite whatever heritage you have, if you're living in a climate which is very sunny, then you're able to handle more fruits and sweet foods than you are if you're in a northerly climate which is more cold. So that's another thing that we should be aware of. The reason for that from a Taoist point of view is that certainly in the UK where this is being recorded, we live in a very damp climate. So in a damp climate in the world out there, this tends to also create a damp climate in the world in there and really lead to what's called a damp spleen condition. So when you have a damp spleen condition, that means that what we in the Western world would call funguses, yeasts, moulds, parasites are more likely to nestle in there. And then when they're in there, they're going to be craving sugars. Like fruits, and when you feed them sugar, it's only making things worse. So this is one of the reasons why, if you're living in a cold, damp climate, sweet food is much less appropriate for you, because it's very likely to be feeding yeasts.
Yes, yeah, so which you used are to have candida in quite a large quantity, and that just leads you to want more and more fruit and sugar.
Definitely. I would say it's not just yeast. I mean, fascinatingly, it's all infections. I had an infection in my foot last year, and it was the only time for a long time that I'd had any desire for any sugary foods. And I eventually, and you know, honey was the thing I particularly liked, which is a superfood. But nonetheless, I eventually realised that what it was is it wasn't me who wanted it; it was the infection. You know, because basically, I was thinking about this today. You know how obvious it is. Bacteria feed on carbohydrate and they feed on protein. You know. And they don't feed on fat. This is why fat is the ideal diet, especially for someone who lives in our kind of climate, where it's cold or where it's damp. Because, you know, if you leave fat around for a long time, what happens to it? I mean, it goes rancid, right? But yeah. It doesn't go rotten. You know why? Because bacteria aren't eating it. So yeah. It's the one food okay, that yeah. bacteria are not makes eating. Sense. If you leave carbohydrate lying around, it'll go rotten. You know, unless it's heavily refined and preserved. You know, and if you leave protein lying around, it'll go rotten, definitely, quickly, and however much you refine or preserve it, but fat doesn't, you know. So which leads us beautifully to our next session, which is nuts. So nuts are part of an optimal diet as long as they're in small doses. We don't want to have large amount of nuts. There's a lot of reasons for that. I'd say one of the main ones is the enzyme inhibitors, which they have a lot more of than seeds, which are like their cousin food. They're also more acidic than seeds. They contain more of the mineral phosphorus, which is something that's great and we do definitely need in order to be healthy, but most people have got an overabundance of it, and an excess of phosphorus leads to problems like osteoporosis as an example, where the acidic phosphorus needs the alkaline calcium to buffer it, so the body robs the bones of calcium in order to buffer this phosphorus in the blood. So, yeah, there's plenty of reasons to take it easy with nuts. But
what a shame.
Exactly. They are delicious, and, you know, an optimal diet should taste good. And adding a few nuts to a recipe or a meal will often make the world a difference in terms of taste and particularly texture.
Yeah, so particularly texture.
So we're not going to exclude nuts.
Had a lovely salad the other day with walnuts in it, really. Took it to another level.
What I'd say also is they're an excellent, optimal transition food. So ideally, again, we would probably limit the amount of nuts we have. But to be honest, if you're going from, you know, a standard diet to an optimal diet, they're an excellent way to make sure that you feel really filled up. So you can eat, to be honest, as many as you want, and it's still going to be optimum compared to the alternatives which are available to you.
Absolutely. And that does bring me to another point where quite often I'll see people who are trying to go onto a kind of a healthier diet, and they will have been told something maybe along the similar lines, like, don't eat too many nuts, for instance.
Yeah.
And so it'll be like, oh, well, I can't have too many of these, but I still feel hungry, so I'll just fill myself up with a chocolate bar instead. It's like, no. If that is really what you're going to do, just eat the whole bag of nuts. Just eat the whole bag of nuts and be done with it. Don't leave the chocolate, you know?
Definitely, and that's really play a part in what I was talking about before with abundant eating, where if you eat an abundance of them, you won't fancy eating everything else. So exactly like you say, everything's relative, you know. So if the option is that otherwise you're just going to have a green juice, then take it easy with the nuts. But if the other option is otherwise you're going to have a Happy Meal, then definitely eat as many nuts as you can so you don't have any space for that Happy Meal.
Yeah.
You know, all that Cadbury's Crunchy, or probably shouldn't mention brands, or whatever, you know. Just, you've got to see things in perspective. And that's partly what we're here to do, is to give you that perspective, to say to you, okay, these are the foods which are optimal, these are the foods which are almost optimal, and everything else is not really optimal and you're better off without it. So we just want to make that clear. So what nuts are there? There's almonds, Brazil nuts, hazelnuts, walnuts, pine nuts, macadamia nuts. Out of those, I'll give an honourable mention to especially Brazil nuts, because they are nuts which are always wild. It's not possible to cultivate a Brazil tree, so every time you buy Brazil nuts, you're supporting the rainforest, because
I did not know that
there needs to be a rainforest in order to have Brazil nut trees. So that's a good reason to buy them. They're also really, really high, and I mean really high, in another essential mineral which we're really lucky in, called selenium or selenium. They contain literally about 100 times as much of selenium in as most of their other comparable foods. And selenium is a mineral which is really important, especially for the thyroid gland. The thyroid gland is a gland which is really under attack in our modern age. It's a bit of a repository, a bit of a magnet for a lot of the toxicity that we build up. And second only to iodine, selenium helps to build up the strength of this thyroid gland. Also, it's connected to the adrenal gland. So if someone is adrenally exhausted, which again, most of us are in this fearful, stressed out world that we live in, the thyroid also always suffers. So we'll talk about iodine later, but for selenium, I would ideally want to have Brazil nuts every day. So they're a nut I'd want every day. Almonds.
Well, can I just ask, yeah? Cashews aren't on that list?
No. No, there's a very good reason for that.
Oh, what a shame. Okay.
Now, again, everything needs to be relative, you know, like you were saying before. So they're not exactly bad, but out of all the nuts, they were the ones that I would least want to go for if I were choosing an optimal diet.
But, of course, when you're in a transition phase, they're the nut you most want to eat.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a few things about cashews. One of them is that they're the highest of all the nuts in sugar, surprisingly, okay. Which is why they have a kind of sweet sort of taste to them.
Yeah.
It's also why they're actually quite good to use if you're making nut cheese, because you can use the sugar, ferment the sugar, which will give it a kind of fermented cheesy sort of taste.
Yes,
something that I've actually done. And
good cashew cheese.
Yeah, that's actually pretty good. But what is the problem with cashew nuts? The form of fat that they contain is not very easy to digest. They're almost never raw. They have to be heated, because they come in shells which have a lot of really nasty, poisonous black gunk in between the nut and the shell. And this has to be removed, basically. And it's a lot of hassle and very unpleasant to remove by hand. So you can buy what are called hand-cracked cashew nuts.
And they are chronically expensive.
But they are very expensive. And even then, from my own experience and experience of my client, they still don't have... They're still not optimal for the digestive process. For whatever reason, I think the fats in them are less easily digestible than in most other nuts or seeds.
Okay.
So they're just not ideal. The very thing that makes them creamy, the sort of emulsifying quality, seems to be the very thing which kind of gunks you up as well, to a degree. I know that there's some people who would definitely argue with that and say, you know, I love them, I get on with them well, in which case, fantastic. If they're optimal for you, then they're optimal for you. But I'm giving general guidelines here, and as a general guideline, I'd avoid them. Almonds are also fairly good. Now, with nuts, what I recommend that you do, certainly with almonds, hazelnuts, all the rest of them, is you soak them for a while first, and then dehydrate them, or just simply dry them at your leisure. When you do that, you release the enzyme inhibitors, which make them very hard to digest. Because a lot of people say, I have problems digesting nuts. You know, I've heard many people say that they actually digest a fry up easier than they do nuts. Mm. This is because the enzymes in nuts are actually quite hard going through the digestive system, especially if it's already compromised, and they're quite hard going through the liver.
Can I just clarify what enzyme inhibitors are?
Yeah, sure. So the reason that a plant has an enzyme inhibitor is to stop it sprouting or growing before it's ready. So it has these enzyme inhibitors to stop it being digested. First of all, it's like nature's way of making sure that you don't eat too many. That's one way, or then that's way of making sure that it's not overeaten, because it will eventually, you know. But from the plant's perspective, what it's doing is it's inhibiting its ability to sprout. So that's why when you add water to it, these enzyme inhibitors get released into the water, and then the nut thinks, right, great, time to go for it, time to sprout.
Okay.
So that's the point of them. So when you're putting into your body a load of these things which are inhibiting the, and enzymes relate to, enzyme is life, enzyme is growth. So an enzyme inhibitor is a chemical which inhibits the process
chemical.
Of life. Oh yes, yeah, absolutely.
And I heard, I don't know whether this is true, carrots, like the tops of carrots have enzyme inhibitors, so when you juice, you should cut the tops off, because little rabbits and what have you are running about and they want to have a little munch, and then that's a natural protection for the plant so they can actually grow.
Yes, absolutely, that's true. It's also true for celery. I just take issue there about juicing carrots. I really wouldn't bother with that, even as a transition food. If you juice a carrot, you're giving yourself a really strong sugar shock, which is not much different.
Yeah, which is why it's a popular form of juice.
Definitely.
But yes.
But what I'm saying is, you know, you're better off juicing a sort of a non-sweet apple, like a Granny Smith or something like that, rather than, you're better off having a fruit, basically, than a carrot. Carrots are really overly sweet if you juice them. So
And highly hybridised as well.
Highly hybridised, yeah. So I'd avoid them as part of any sort of optimal nutrition.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. So macadamias are also really good nuts. They contain a lot of substances which are quite beautifying for the skin. Walnuts contain omega-3 fatty acids, so they're good for the brain, which, of course, if you look at a walnut, what do you think of? Think of a brain.
And macadamias can be used in place of cashews for their creaminess and their, you know, in a food preparation sense.
Excellent point, yes. Wherever you think you need cashews for, you can in fact use macadamias in their place, and they're a lot healthier.
And they are actually nicer, to be fair.
I find that too, yeah.
Yeah.
They don't have that sort of sickly sort of taste that cashews do. Anyway, that's just a personal opinion.
Yes, indeed.
So seeds, that would be our next category, category number four. So in terms of nuts and seeds, ideally, optimally, we always go for seeds rather than nuts. They're healthier. They're a better source of protein. There's more protein in seeds than there are in nuts. So in nuts, the highest protein food is almonds, probably, which are about 25% protein, or 25 grams per 100 grams of protein. In the seeds, you've got hemp seeds, which are about 35% protein, flax seeds, which are at 35% protein. So you've got a higher protein food, that's number one. They're just as filling as nuts, in my experience. They're also a lot cheaper, which is really helpful.
They are, yes, absolutely.
The one thing I would say that's most important, though, is that their oils are of higher quality. So whereas nuts tend to have monounsaturated fats, or at least a dominance of monounsaturated fats, which I've talked about in my fats video, seeds tend to come with polyunsaturated fats. Now, interestingly, like I explained in that... I think it's fats and oils video. The healthier fat is, the more damaging and unhealthy it becomes when you heat it up.
So, I know.
So very ironic. So the most healthy forms of fat definitely comes from seeds, but also means that seeds and seed oils are the very last thing you want when they're heated. Now, when it comes to oil, people ask me, how do you know they're heated? Let's just put it this way. If it doesn't insist that it's cold pressed and it hasn't been heated anyway, it's been heated. Okay, because when you heat up oils, it preserves them, makes them last a lot longer. It also makes them easier to process. It's an easier way of extracting the oil from the seed or nut in the first place. So unless it makes a big deal about the fact that it has never been heated, it probably has been.
Yeah.
So seeds and their oils, absolutely excellent. So seeds and their oils are mainly high in omega-6 and omega-3. Now, we want both in our diet. Most people are chronically short of omega-3s. That's the thing that they've most been lacking. So, and the seed oil, which is the highest in omega-3 by far, is flax, otherwise known as linseed. So they're excellent. I encourage everyone to have some form of linseed in their diet every day because of that omega-3s. Preferably the cold-pressed oil, but flax seeds are also excellent in their whole form because they're, firstly, they're high in protein. Second of all, they're high in lignans, which is the stuff which makes them gel-like when you add water to them, which is also relates to the third reason, which is they're really handy to prepare food with. Whenever you're making dehydrated foods, whether you're making breads or burgers, this is for raw food people out there or people interested in raw food, you pretty much always use flax seeds because of the gelatinous quality they have. They're really excellent for binding foods. I imagine that you use them in your raw food preparation.
In fact, seeds full stop are incredibly helpful and have a wide variety of uses and possibilities.
Yes, absolutely.
Within raw food for... in fact, more so than nuts, generally.
They're a real staple, would you agree?
Yeah, I would.
The one thing you don't want to run out of.
With cheeses and things, because I don't have enough money to go along making nice macadamia nut cheeses or whatever, I'll do sunflower seeds as a base and then a handful of macadamias, and that is enough to give it the texture that I need.
Let's talk about sunflower seeds next, yeah. So, well,
they are the... the pinnacle of seeds in my book.
I'm not sure I'll agree with that, but they're definitely, you know, in the top three.
From a food preparation point of view,
okay. Yeah, sunflower seeds are amazing. So whereas flax seeds are like your number one source of very affordable omega-3s, sunflower seeds are your number one source of very affordable omega-6s. So if you include both in your diet, you've got an amazing combination of the two. They're also high in protein. They're also, as has just been mentioned, very delicious and excellent for all sorts of food preparation. I, for instance, make a raw hummus with them, and rather than using chickpeas, I'll use raw sunflower seeds. Absolutely delicious.
Breads, burgers, cheeses, yeah. Loads.
Yeah, there's no end, you know, it's absolutely amazing.
Pastries.
The other two seeds which I recommend, slightly more expensive, is pumpkin seeds. Pumpkin seeds are also fantastic. They've got the benefits of flax seeds and sunflower seeds in terms of they've got omega-3s and omega-6s. The other thing that they're amazing for is they're really excellent anti-parasitic seeds. So again, and most people have some kind of parasitic problem, so they're useful in that sense for pretty much everyone. I'm not allowed to say that, I forget I said that. Another thing is that they're very high in zinc, and zinc is something that is missing or very lacking in most vegan diets, and most, you know, all diets are kind of like a compromise to one sense or another, and the optimal food diet that I'm laying out here, with the exception of food diets, with the exception of superfoods, is very low in zinc. So it's good to have pumpkin seeds every day to make sure that you have an adequate amount of zinc, although like I say, the superfoods also provide plenty of it if you were to have those as well.
So I find they're fairly interchangeable in with sunflower seeds and a lot of food preparation senses as well.
Yeah. I personally found that in terms of making them into a butter or grinding them up, they're fairly unpleasant tasting. Maybe it's just a personal thing.
No, I agree with that.
But if I eat them whole or throw them whole in a salad or chop them up, but, you know, not grind them up, or in burgers, yeah, or any breads, any sort of thing, then they're actually delicious. Just for some reason, when you grind them up into a seed butter, they taste bad. In fact, when I first tried pumpkin seeds, it was in the form of a seed butter, and I think I was put off eating them for about 2 years, and then I thought, I'll try again. So, they're actually quite nice if they're just whole. So if you've been put off by pumpkin seed butter, don't be put off permanently. The one other seed I'm going to mention is probably the king of seeds, or the queen of seeds, probably more appropriate, which is hemp seeds. So hemp seeds have all the benefits we've just been talking about of all the other seeds, as well as being very high in GLA, which is what omega-6s get turned into. So it's basically like the optimum form of omega-6s. Also found in evening primrose oil, which you may have heard of, or star flower oil. Hemp seeds contain a super absorbable, digestible form of protein called elastin and globulin, I believe. I hope to be corrected about that. But they're ones which are very similar to the protein that actually exists in your muscles. Supporting hemp is also supporting the planet again, because hemp plants are incredibly easy to grow. Hemp seeds contain all sorts of minerals and nutrients which are missing from a lot of other plants, because the hemp plant is a real way of digging right down with its roots and getting to all those nutrients and minerals which most plants just don't get at. So they're very high in minerals which we'd otherwise be deficient in, which is why they technically go in the superfood category, but I've decided to throw them here in the seed category. They're also very high in sulfurous amino acids again. The reason I keep highlighting the importance of those is they're really important for detoxification, and they're something that is missing in a raw vegan diet, or a vegan diet in general, or even a vegetarian diet usually. So really important source of those sulfurous amino acids. And sulfur is something which helps to clear toxicity out of the body. It's also excellent for the liver meridian. So every time I'm mentioning sulfur, I'm talking about something that's very good for the liver meridian, good for the liver, good for cleaning out the blood, which again then gives you the beautiful skin and the beautiful glow. And we're back to beauty.
Very nice, very nice. Yeah, it's also incredibly versatile. I do a lot of food preparation, raw food preparation for children, and hemp seeds are a fantastic way of feeding them. it's being able to make milks and smoothies and drinks and cereals and all that kind of thing using a base of hemp seeds has really been very, very helpful.
Yeah, I hadn't mentioned those. It's a really good point. Thank you. Hemp milks are another thing, which is where you grind up the seeds with some water and then strain off the fibre, I believe. Is that right? And then you end up with just a pure liquid, which is very similar to milk. But
absolutely fantastic. Suddenly, your world opens up. It's like berry smoothies, and you feel like a real person again. having a chocolate milkshake can be raw and delicious and good for you.
So if you're interested in doing that, all you need to do is look for what's called a nut milk bag and purchase one of those, and you need a blender to blend up your nuts and or seeds, and then you can make your own nut milk or seed milk.
That's
which
true.
You can then use to make milkshakes, right, and smoothies and all the rest of it.
Or ice creams and things for the children. I know it's not optimal, but you know.
I don't know, I think that ice cream made out of hemp milk probably is optimal.
With lots of superfoods, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not bad going. and when you get really professional and realise that you can't live without hemp milk, there are actually hemp milk makers.
Ooh.
If you're going to go for it.
So that's excellent. Thank you very much for that, and we'll return for part two.